morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone.
Good morning, folks. Mike Cosentino
Democratic
here.
Mike Cosentino here for another show. We're going to talk about education this morning. Steve Williamson is still running around California somewhere, having a good time, I hope. Steve, by the way, you're fired. I've had him taken over. We have another show here on. We've done other shows on education. It's hard not to do. We could do a weekly show on education. We could do a daily show on education in America. It's one of the bottom lines is that education has changed completely or a lot since you've known it, since many of you went to school, and it's never coming back. And one of the reasons for this change is the voucher system. Has so much controversy and so much going on around it. But basically, the voucher where the money for a student follows the student, whether he goes to a public school, a private school, or a private school called a public school. And that's one of the things. And it's hard to, the research now in 2017 is finally becoming clear. Arizona's been doing this for 20 years. Other states, and was one of the first, and certainly one of the most, upwards of 400 schools are charter schools, probably more, many more than that now. So the charter public controversy, and the first thing charter school advocates tell you is that charter schools are public schools. Well, yeah, they are publicly funded, but we do have a guest this morning. We have a former 40-year teacher. The teacher's in the classroom for 40 years. She is a political activist out of the Phoenix area. Jan Nichols, good morning.
Good morning to you, and good morning to your listeners.
She has Jan's been on before, along with some of our other educational experts. But it's hard to try not to just make this some depressing thing. I was talking to Jan yesterday, and that you can still go down to Sedona Round Rock High School. They still have art classes there. You can find them. They still have PE classes there in their public school. You can find them. They still have science classes. They still have AP classes. I'm pretty sure they still have those things. So as far as recognizing a school that your child went to or you went to, a public school, you can still find it, but it's getting harder and harder, and it's less and less funded. Staff, the schools have soaked up so much of the budget cuts, which we're going to talk about a little later. But I want to make sure that, we've done past shows. You've heard me railing about charter schools and how they drain money from public schools. But now we got the numbers. Don't we have the numbers, Jan? We got some numbers anyway.
Let me just address what you were saying about Sedona Red Rock School. First of all, approximately half of the money from the general fund, 48% from the general fund goes to the state. But basically the schools, like Red Rocks, get 44% of their income from property taxes. Mm. So the property taxes in Sedona are based on a little bit higher property values than, say, where I taught in the Phoenix Union High School District.
Right.
I taught at Trevor Brown, which is in the heart of Phoenix, and then Cesar Chavez also, which was in the lower part and the lower socioeconomics. They don't have the same draw from the property taxes.
That was one of the things that some of the websites have said, that American schools do right. They recognize socioeconomic status as a factor in education. There are lots of people that don't believe that, but anybody that spends 2 minutes in front of students of any age, K through 95, realizes that your socioeconomic background has a huge impact on your education. Can it be overcome? Yeah, with a lot of hard work and a good education. But let's talk about let's talk about vouchers. I want to talk about one of the aspects I want to get in right away is that, you know, what they're finding out in Arizona was supposed to be an experimental ground to improve education. They said if we take away the regulations, some of the regulations, that then teachers and schools and administrations will be able to focus on education and perform these educational laboratories, and we will get all kinds of educational innovation. When the joke was all on us that it was just another money-making scheme that and what you hear the right say and what you hear Republicans saying all the time is that it's all about choice. Well, it's not about choice. It's almost all or many, many of the charter school students were charter school students before. They are still charter school students, except now, or parochial school students, or private school students. Let me get off the charter thing. Now we're talking about public funding of all of these other institutions. Charter, public, religious, so if it was a religious school student, it's still a religious school student. The only difference is now is that you are paying for his education. So if you see a lot of new stuff around your church, you know, a new steeple and some new pews, you know, some new stuff, a new parking lot, well, that's because they can afford it now, because they're not putting money into education because the taxpayers are, the public taxpayers are paying for it. And I think over the years, as I say this, it's gotten ground down. People say, so? So we're paying for some kid to go to a church school. What's wrong with that? Is there something wrong with that, Jan?
Well, I think there is. I think there's a problem paying, a public paying for a private religious curriculum. This is called the Wild West of charters and vouchers here in Arizona. We're known throughout the nation as anything goes here. This new law, I just wanted to explain the new law for
please,
you.
It's called
what is an ESA? It's an Empowerment Scholarship Account. And basically, if you remember the word account, it means that there is a debit-like card given to the parent. The parent can then use that. The program allocates 90% of the money that would go to a district or maybe even a charter that's a little, little hard to understand. They're previously attended by the student. So the money is put into their account. They have a debit card, and they can use that for anything that relates to education. Now, they say that there are parameters for that you cannot use it for iPods, you cannot use it for field trips, you cannot use it for this and that. But what the problem is here is that there are not auditors. We don't have audits going through and saying very few audits are taken on that money that goes to them.
Wow.
So we have, just to explain the law, the new law, for 2017-2018, the academic year, it is open to all students in kindergarten, first, sixth, and ninth grades. In 2018-2019, it is 2nd, 7th, and 10th will be added to that. So that in 2021, all children from K-12 will be educated. They only will accept, however, only they have a cap on it, the $5,500 per year. So $5,500 are eligible this year to join and get an ESA.
So they give the parents a little card that has a $5,500 balance on it and say, go give it to a school, find a school that will educate your kid.
Or homeschooling.
Wow.
And homeschooling has even fewer restrictions.
Wow.
Homeschooling, you do not need a, excuse me, you do not need any credentials. You don't even need to have a high school diploma. Now, there are companies, of course, that have curriculums, and those homeschoolers can actually follow that curriculum. And, of course, there are people who are educated. I know myself that there are several parents who are educated. They have college degrees. They know how to teach, and they have it. But you are given approximately, it depends,
sure.
$5,500 on your debit card, and you can use that for whatever looks like it could be education. That's per student.
Just let me back this up a little. I guess I should have known this, but I don't. So if I got four kids, I get $20,000 a year from the state of Arizona taxpayers to educate my children. Which I can go to the beach if I want, right? I
mean, and that has happened. People are going to Disneyland. Now, it's not. It is restricted.
Oh, I see.
It is restricted. But there have been incidences that they have done it. I've heard of them. So they can go to the zoo.
The lack of audits is scary. Yeah. That's a scary.
All right. Well, the lack of auditing, because in homeschooling, for instance, they do not have to test, and there are no attendance requirements.
I see, right.
So you can decide that today's not a good day to teach, and maybe tomorrow's not either.
This month might not
this
be.
This month might be.
Exactly.
You're gonna, and then we get to the end. And then there's also the socialization factor. They're not around people that actually, interact with other children, et cetera, except their own family.
Right.
The other thing is that if the family decides that they cannot educate this child in the arts, you know, music, art, any sports, they can actually go to the public school and get there and have that as a basis. They can take them there and they can participate. And the public school has to take them without money.
Oh, they don't get a piece of the action.
They don't get a piece of the action. They have to take them.
All right. Well, this is interesting. And this is, is this on the ballot or is this law already?
This is law.
I see. Okay.
This is law. And what is happening is, SOS, which is Support Our Schools, has been on the forefront of getting petitions out.
Yeah, I signed a petition.
To repeal this law. And they have already garnered the defense of this particular petition. But we have petitions. We have till August 8th to, or we, I say we, I'm not part of it, but I am carrying petitions. We have till August 8th to gather 75,000 petitions.
How you doing?
And I think they're going to make it because everybody's a little bit upset.
Now, is this the one that Lori, the columnist for the Arizona Republic, wrote about that.
Michelle Robertson?
Lesko.
Debbie Lesko.
Legislators. She was talking about taking, somehow subverting the.
She's trying to go around what they intend to do. She intends to do, because you said this is a possibility.
Right.
Debbie Lesko out of LD21.
That's correct.
She said that what they want to do is an end run around the law, and the law, coming back, putting forth the legislation that they would repeal it.
Right.
And then there would be nothing on the ballot. So
it
then
would
they
automatically remove SOS.
It would automatically remove the measure that we would be putting on the ballot. So then what they would do is they pass it again.
Thereby subverting the will of the people by taking the ballot measure off. Not letting you vote for it, repealing the law, ballot measure goes away, pass the law again. This is the height of bait and switch. I mean, do they have like little peas under shells that they are three card money on street corners?
I don't know. I don't know how any of them sleep.
This is bad.
I don't know how any of them sleep, because they always seem to have a plan that will counter the other plan that comes up. But this is a possibility that they will do that.
Now, just real quick, I want to make sure we get it in. So so they get their card, and this a variation of this is happening in other states. So it's not just Arizona.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know. I was reading a big thing on Illinois. Fort Wayne is the largest school district in the state. NPR just did a huge story, not just in the last couple of months, about the drain of public funds. And how many of, you know, the Catholic school students are being funded now? First they were funded out of the school's fund, and now they're being funded out of the tax money. But that these, you know, right now they're going to Christian schools and Mormon schools, but why can't they go to Muslim schools?
And they can.
And they can.
Unless they change, they amend the law and say only certain ones. I'm not sure that would go over.
That sounds a little unconstitutional in America. Don't get me wrong. With the country we're living in today, that could happen. But that doesn't seem.
There is litigation right now about the constitutionality of giving public money to private religious schools. So we'll just see how that runs out. The Arizona has drained, the legislature has drained 85% of funding since, to the public schools, from 2009 to 2017. So 85% has declined since 2009. However, 15% has increased to the funding for charter schools.
So that's an incredible amount. I know schools are desperate. They've been cutting. And so by 2017, you know, by my non-official recollection, they started this cutting with Fife Symington right around 92, 93. They went on this massive cutting binge that schools were bloated, schools were all, and it was, may have been true to the extent at the administrative level. That there was some places where you could find some money. And that maybe, you know, via the transportation, accounts, you could, find some money. But after all these years of cutting and cutting, as you pointed out, 85% in the last, 9 years.
In 2009, just to give you a statistic here, in 2009, the public districts received $450 per pupil in elementary and $490 per pupil in 9 through 12. In 2008. And today, districts receive $60 per pupil, a reduction of 85%.
Wow.
So the additional assistance from charter schools has gone from increase of 1,474 pupil to 1,700 pupil per pupil in K through 8. And then we're not even talking about the corruption that exists with the vouchers and with the charters. We have many legislators in the Arizona State Legislature that own or participate or have some sort of interest in charter schools. They've either founded or have a charter of their own. And you have Senator Kavanaugh, from Mesa, who actually he is a processor, and he gets 10% of every single voucher himself.
He's got to be saying, what a country.
Yeah.
This kind of corrupt. That you should not be allowed to pass the laws that allow you access to tax money and for you to make a profit on, and yet you're the legislator. Well, I know our own Sylvie Allen has, for LD6 here, she's a senator. She has a piece of a charter school, I believe. Apparently it's a good investment because you have this, you can control the costs by paying teachers crap, mm-hmm. and not cleaning and not having all the things that we grew up with libraries and school librarians and nurses and maybe a social worker or two, all those things that some states and what we might say a normal public school has because you're dealing with massive amount of students with problems and with needs you can control all of that. And so.
And it's audited and it's public.
And it's audited and it's public. Yeah, matter of fact, they made schools in Arizona, and I get, they made us pay for our own audits. You had to have the audit and you had to take it out of your budget. It was just that simple.
Sylvia Allen, I believe, began with George Washington Academy up in, is it Shiloh or one of the small towns up there? But what they did is what a lot of the charters do. They begin as a non-profit, but then they establish a management organization company. That management corporation can be an LLC, but it is most often it is for profit. It is a corporation in and of itself and cannot be audited by the state of Arizona. So what they do is they take over all the management of that nonprofit, and they can set salaries. They can have, they can also piece it out. George Washington Academy was first sold or began with Ed Key. It became an Ed Key or management organization. But I think since then they have sold out in pieces. They can also sell, basically put that corporation in four pieces instead of one. In other words, if you have a management company, they may decide that they'll piece it out to this corporation can only deal with curriculum. This corporation can deal with management of sort. They have, most of these companies also have a high public relations budget that they do.
Sure. So you got all this like Trump-like wheeling and dealing, but it's schools. They've monetized and commodity-ed schools to the point where, and I said last year, but I get, apparently it's still true or even more true, that you know, people like Bill Gates and others, people, investors, are saying schools, charter schools, voucher schools are a good investment because it has a health.
And that's began with Rupert Murdoch, who said, you know, wait a minute, let's get this privatized so that we can, and corporatize it so that we can make our profits, because they're always making children. They're coming up all the time, and we have an investment, and that's really a cynical way of looking at children.
Well,
I don't understand why you want to commodify a child, but I'm not a profiteer either.
We're making up words here. I do like what you said, though. Privatize is one thing, and that makes it sound almost nice. You know, we privatize our prisons. We privatize our food service. We privatize our social services. I worked for a company that at one point was a private social, you know, dealing with state agencies and getting clients that way. But when you say privatize and corporatize, you know, those two steps make it sound more accurate and more ominous, which is exactly what seems to be going on.
And because of the public's relations hype that they do, and they spend millions and millions of dollars promoting through TV, radio, advertising at all different levels.
Radio ads are good, so it's TV ads we can't stand.
Radio's okay, huh?
Yeah.
So they put this up as a meme that this is a model and we should have a business model. Well, a business model is not necessarily good for a school system. A school system has to care about all of its children, not just those that they can profit for. For instance, I taught at Cesar Chavez High School and I had I was a gifted facilitator down there. They have gifted programs, and in 2007, the legislature decided to get rid of all gifted funding for public schools. So what happened was those children had to go back into mainstreaming. Now, gifted children are extremely bright, some of them much brighter than the teacher occasionally.
Yes, it's scary,
and,
isn't it?
Scary. But what we do know about gifted children parents is they will find a way to have their children educated. they're not going to leave them to be bored in a school system that only has mainstreaming. Interbasis. Those children that I had at Cesar Chavez, who were extremely bright, who were wonderful, went to BASIS. A lot of them went to BASIS. And BASIS has a very high level of testing that they do to come into the program. You can't just go to BASIS because you want to go to BASIS. You have to test in.
I see.
You have to be able to, first of all, the seventh graders have to have passed, they must have completed high school algebra. And they must be able to pass at least by the end six college advanced placement tests.
So get that stuff out of the way at the public school and then come here.
Right.
Unlike a public school that has to take all comers, which is the whole idea, by the way. You show up, they educate you. This school and many others, by the way, get to pick and choose.
Well, BASIS in Scottsdale was the number one or number two school in the nation. In 2016, I believe it was, maybe 14, they graduated 34 students.
Yeah.
All were gifted.
Yeah.
18 were white,
yeah.
And then the rest were Asians, and there were no ELL students, no Hispanic students,
yeah.
No black students, no children who had special needs.
Yeah.
And they...
You're trying to say it's easy to do a good job with 34 really bright kids?
Well, when I left Trevor Brown, the last year that I was in Trevor Brown, for the first 3 weeks, I had 40 students in one classroom.
Well, that's it. And I always said any teacher can teach the gifted. It takes a real teacher to get other students from A to B to show improvement, to get them interested, and that's... You know, that's where, don't get me wrong, it's fun and it's a challenge to look like a TV program with all of these gifted students, all these engaged students and whatnot.
Well,
but that's not necessarily the reality. It's harder. Most times it's a mix. And who's to say, and I want to get this in, who's to say that, you know, moving a certain student, making them a little more aware, giving them more information, giving them more tools to access information, isn't a greater educational achievement than having massively high test scores and zillions of advanced placement classes and whatnot. I mean,
and that is one of the things too. If you want a child who can pass tests, then you want to go to one of the militarized schools that have certain requirements, behavior requirements, etc.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you want a well-rounded child, a child that has higher thinking orders, skills, and can put critique and ask questions and evolve as a productive citizen rather than just somebody who has a narrow limitation of taking tests, then, you know, that's what you need in public schools. Do we have problems in public schools? Yes. Do we have things that need to be corrected? Yes. But you don't actually make any advancements if you're draining all the resources, if people don't have any way to teach, you know. And we've made a lot about teachers having to buy all their extra things in classrooms. That's true. They do. And I spent probably $250, $500. But I also spent in those low income, what I did basically is a kid didn't have lunch money. Could I borrow something, Ms. Nichols? Yes, we'll have you there.
That was a big news a couple of days ago. A teacher, once again, I'm thinking it was Illinois. I don't think it was Arizona, but she was panhandling for school supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the guy that outside of Safeway that has the little sign that says, you know, help. She had a sign that said help, and people were stopping to give her money. Is this the future of education? I was going to start today's program, I was going to start today's program saying that education is over as we know it. It won't return for it. at least a generation and maybe two or three. And that was going to be the premise of our education show this morning, that so much had changed. The funding had changed. We're at 85% reduced funding. The voucher system of following students that yet now we're funding every private school. We're funding every parochial school. And we're not auditing and we're not, we don't know the results. One of the points of a beautiful Atlantic and an NPR story was, why is it so hard to assess charter non-public schools? I'm trying to find a name for them. Publicly funded non-public schools. Why is it so hard to assess them? Is it attendance requirements? Is it the lack of testing? They
are not required to give a specific testing means. In other words, they're not, in the state of Arizona, many of the charter schools do have testing. They
right.
do meet
right.
state requirements for that. But the problem is you have many of the other schools who do not do means testing. They do not do aggregate testing.
And where they are tested, with some exceptions, they do worse. I mean, if there's anything that I'm seeing over and over again, and maybe I'm looking at, anyway.
Well, and vouchers have had significantly negative effects.
Yes.
when they have been assessed. They find that they're a negative assessment. And I just wanted to make sure that I put this in today.
Please.
That they're at the risk of sounding like a conspiracy theorist. I have to tell you about the new movement. And the new movement is that we wanted to get along with the district schools. Charter school movements and the voucher, we want to get along with the public schools. So let's get together and collaborate. And one of the things that we want to collaborate on is we want to get together, and we know that you have certain expertise and we have certain expertise, and of course it's wonderful, but there is a sinister thing about it, and it is, this is the Center for Reinventing Public Education, and it's located at the University of Washington. It is called the DPE model for the nation. It's cited 39 cities where they're trying to get in and make sure that they take over. And DPE stands for Destroying Public Education. Now, it sounds like I made this up. It is not. You can find this online.
Sounds like a liberal conspiracy theory.
Liberal conspiracy. But what they do is they call it blended/personalized learning. But the idea is they want to privatize and profitize. They want to have ideologically concentrate and also put in the religious aspect, as long as it's a certain religion, and also
Christians,
because gentrification is included in this. They are now pushing out minorities and low income, so that you're having even more disparity in income, more disparity in education.
The Center for Reinventing
Center
Public
for
Education.
Reinventing Public Education, CRPE.
So what Jan is saying is, you know, it's not like some random movement or some right-wing ideology that's necessarily, it's not about choice, that there's an organized, apparently, it always certainly seemed that way behind all of this, but there's somebody's finally institutionalized this whole assault.
It is about choice.
Assault,
it's about choice. They want to choose you.
Yeah.
They
want
to choose the student.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. It's not the student or the parent choosing the school. It's
the school choosing the student.
That's the joke. That's the, you know, the
And keep in mind that there are no, when they do this and they take over, they've cited that one of the things that they need to cite there is they need to take over the Board of Education. So they come in as blending, they come in as, and then they take over the board. The board then loses public accountability because they go in secret.
Right.
They start holding secret meetings. The open meeting law is not adhered to. And, in fact, I think of thousands of ways to not have an open meeting law. So it is a cynical move. Some people cite ALEC, the American Legislative Executive Council, as being one of the key factors. They're having their meeting up in Denver right now, where many of our legislators have gone to get the legislation that they're going to introduce.
Don't lose your place, Jan. But we want to. We're talking to Jan Nichols this morning, educational activist from the Phoenix area. But we want to make sure we say hello and thank you to Democrats of the Red Rocks for their support of Democratic Perspective. Now and always, and for their monthly breakfasts. We'll have somebody, a speaker at their monthly breakfast coming on the show soon. Steve Nuno is going to talk about immigration with us here. And we have we want to thank Steve Segner and his crew over at El Portal, the restaurant and boutique hotel. We want to say hello to Sylvia Espy and Maurier, and thank them, Steve and his crew, for their support of Democratic Perspective. We'd like to thank you for your support of Democratic Perspective. You can go to our website, bbid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. We can find all our shows there, and you can find a button to donate. Certainly, the show doesn't run on the air. we need funds, and we do have some people that support us, and we thank them, and that's what we're doing right now. We want to make sure that you are aware of the DOR, the Democrats of the Red Rocks monthly breakfast, that happens, at the Old Sedona Bar and Grill. We want to give a shout-out to League of Women Voters. We've had them on plenty of time. Of course, they are nonpartisan, but they certainly give us some good information here. And these days, in the world that we live in 2017, reason, normal, has a liberal bias. That's the whole idea here in these crazy, crazy times. One of the things I want to come back and talk about, Jan, is the Trump effect. Even before he took office, teachers were complaining about the Trump effect. That this whole sort of release of the seamier side of children, or the uglier side of children, the hateful side of students, was all of a sudden a huge problem, and they blamed the leadership of the country as like giving permission for this violence and hate, and the whole Trump effect, that exclusion was okay. Have you seen any of this?
Well, I'm not in the public school system now, but I do hear from some of my colleagues who talk to me about the bullying effect. We've had a problem with bullying since time began in public education or any education system. But now it seems as though this effect you're talking about has given license to people to express their anger, express whatever they thought was anger, whatever, and it's given license to more bullying and taking place. And we have also an outcropping of new organizations that are asking for time on campus to promote their ideology or their hate programs, and so you do see those coming up.
I do want to talk about a couple of things. We want to talk about August 4th at 6 o'clock in Phoenix, and I'm sure your Arizona Talks Education. We're talking about the voucher debate with the Arizona Education Association, your organization, Save Our Schools SOS, and the Goldwater Institute, all going to happen on Osborne Road in Scottsdale. Please go to the DOR, D-O-R-R, Democrats of the Red Rocks Facebook page, and you can find out more about that. That's kind of a big deal. We want to also acknowledge the Yavapai County Democratic Picnic, which is going to happen July 30th. Those things are kind of fun, and you want to meet some candidates, you want to meet some local people, local political activists that then get up some more information than you can. David Garcia and Steve Farley are going to be there, the two governor candidates. David Garcia, Steve Farley have both been on the show. and they and in Sedona, and they will certainly be in Prescott for the Yavapai Democratic Party annual picnic. And you're going to have to RSVP. You can find them through the website. So those are a couple of things, and certainly there's this is a politically active time. One thing we can thank Trump for, as I've said every show, is for recruitment for the reasonable side of politics. He certainly has helped out our the door breakfast attendance and certainly raised an awareness, a political awareness. And then it's too bad that they had to, you know, it used to be we could just kind of ignore politics, and people still think you can do that. And we don't have that luxury anymore. The right wing, the Republicans, have taken away that luxury. They've taken away your funding for education. They've taken away those kinds of things. And so no, please, we need your political activism, and shows like this need your support. And
this is the only way that we're going to combat any of this negativity, is to be down there, be active, let your legislators know that they are not going to be able to get away with things.
And it's very, and it's much more effective than you think it is. I know I talk to people all the time, and they don't think it's going to be effective, Jan. They say, well, what can I do? I'm one man, I'm one person, I'm one woman. And believe it, they respond. If you call, if you write, they will, it matters. It really, truly matters.
It does. I'd like to give a shout out, if I could, for a couple of people that give the data that I look forward to the data here, and that's Grand Canyon Institute is a nonpartisan, nonprofit group, and all they do is research,
right.
And it's wonderful research. The Grand Canyon Institute, and I get a lot of my information from there. The other one is the Arizonans for Charter School Accountability, headed by Jim Hall. He's just one man doing all this research, and he does have a Facebook presentation. He does have a website.
Say the name again.
Jim Hall. Mm-hmm. Arizonans for Charter School Accountability.
Very good.
So, and of course, the AEA and AEA retired
right.
And SOS.
Right, right. Well, then that's it. I mean, the voucher system, and of course, we have Betty DeVos. We've gone through the whole show and not mentioned. Here it is in July, 6 months after Betty DeVos, the Secretary of Education, has gotten her appointment. Who is a huge proponent of religious schools. That's what she did before taking office. And so these are the kinds of issues that you could be made aware of. Everywhere, but and it is necessary, and it does matter. So I guess that's the biggest message that we have this morning. Of all things, we talked about education, we talked about immigration in the last couple of weeks, we talked about the environment last week, and certainly that's Democratic perspective. That's what we do here. We talk about the environment, we talk about education, we talk about jobs, we talk about labor. These are as far as we're concerned, the Democratic issues, and these are the issues important to people. We talk about Social Security. We talk about health care. We talk lots about health care. I want to thank Jan Nichols from Phoenix for helping us out here and giving us some great information. Please, you can listen to this show. There's a lot of technical information here, and they do this on purpose. The right side does this on purpose. They want to overwhelm you and have you go off and not care. But please care. Go to our website, bbid.org. You can listen to this show again. We have a wonderful guy that writes a little synopsis, so you can read the synopsis. Listen to the show. Get Jan's information. You can always call. You can always email to get more information. But a Democratic Perspective is broadcast again at 12:15 on Saturdays. The same show comes on Saturdays at 12:15. So we're here Monday at 8:15, Saturday at 12:15, Democratic Perspective. And Steve Williamson, see you soon, man. Come on back, and we'll take care of you.
listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.